Imagine worshiping technology to the point that you're willing to sell your soul to an AI demon god in exchange for destroying the entire human race. Because that's the secret motivation behind what's going on in our world right now. Find out the people involved and how this fits into all the occult topics we covered over the years, from Balenciaga to Aleister Crowley and Elon Musk, today here on Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. Today we continue our journey into the Dark Enlightenment series. This is part two. If you haven't listened to part one, link in the show notes. Check it out. Today we're covering Nick Land, a philosopher. They call him the godfather of accelerationism. And we're going to cover the transhuman agenda of reaching the AI technological singularity. Friedrich Nietzsche, white ethnostates, Nick's occult group called the CCRU from the 90s. We'll talk about the Cybernetic Culture Research Unit, Hyperstition, Cyberpunk, H.P. Lovecraft, Kabbalah, Esotericism, Numerology, Demonology, Aleister Crowley, The Outside, and the Faustian Bargain to appease the AI god Roko's Basilisk, and how Elon Musk hooked up with Grimes over this pact to the AI demon god. You think I'm being incredulous? You think I'm being facetious? It's all true, and it's all going to be revealed today. We're going to take a look at these Balenciaga conspiracy era artists, Jake and Dinos Chapman, who, little did I know, were part of a much larger, darker effort, because they were part of the CCRU, and I will break down one of their documentaries about accelerationism. Today's going to be an amazing, insane look into the roots of the philosophy of the Golden Age, the Great Reset that we are experiencing right now, unfolding before our eyes. And if you listen to part one, which surely you have, we talked about Curtis Yarvin, one of the philosophers who is whispering in the ears of all the technocrats that are running this country right now. But it goes back further, and it goes back to a man that they call Nick Land. And we're going to reveal all kinds of stuff today. It's going to be pretty amazing. Now, quick side note, a little housekeeping. If you haven't picked up one of my super soft podcast t-shirts, that's a great way to support the show and show everyone in the world you are well ahead of them, because on the back of this shirt it says these nerds are going to kill us. And I didn't know those prophetic words I posted on the back of that shirt 6 years ago would hold so much weight. You can get your super soft occult symbolism and pop culture t-shirts at gumroad.com/isaacw, gum like bubblegum, gumroad.com/IsaacW with two A's. Links are always in the show notes, okay? And all the links I always talk about, my social medias, the free book you can get, my first book from 2012, the other podcast I do with my wife, all kinds of stuff. You can always go to allmylinks.com/IsaacW and find all the places that I'm at all over the internet. Now, Nick Land, he is the godfather of accelerationism. And what is that? Well, it's a philosophy that goes back to the 1990s, a simpler time. And he was a part of this group, the CCRU, which I'll explain in a minute what that is. Now, accelerationism. This is a philosophy rooted with revolution ideas. And originally, from what I understand and read and researched, it has ideologies from the left and right, from both sides, calling for a drastic intensification of capitalist growth. It's kind of a hyper-capitalism thing, or late-stage capitalism, I would argue. It's saying, hey, this capitalist system, it didn't really work out, so let's just hammer down and push it to its final conclusion, which turns out to be a transhuman AI demon, which we'll get to as well. It's all about a technological change, social change, to destabilize any kind of existing systems or institutions and create this radical transformation that they want in order to create and facilitate the conditions for what they call the technological singularity. What is that? Well, it's the point where the technological growth becomes uncontrollable and irreversible. We're headed there, I assure you. It's to usher in the new revolution of existence. They want to give birth to the transhuman. They want to effectively end the human species and create the new one, the transhuman, a technological cyborg Terminator type stuff, right? And we talked about this over the years many times. Ray Kurzweil, I've read a few of his books. Fascinating stuff. Going back to the 90s, he was into this stuff. And you can see why. There was a philosophy going around. I didn't know about this. I was learning to drive in the 90s and graduating high school. So the term accelerationism is, it's pretty intuitive in the idea that, yeah, it's about accelerating things to bring about the final stage of capitalism. Now, this term is also used by white nationalists to accelerate the conflict of races, to have a civil race war in order to achieve their desired end state, which is a white ethnostate. So, to sort of sum it up, accelerationism could be embraced by folks on the extreme left, folks on the extreme right, racists, anyone who's like, hey, this system sucks, let's just burn it to the ground and, full throttle. And Nick Land was one of these guys talking about it, and they call him the godfather of accelerationism. So if you look to his writings in 2017, he wrote an essay called A Quick and Dirty Introduction to Accelerationism, which cites the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, the nihilism guy, who had said in The Will to Power that, quote, the leveling process of the European man is a great process which should not be checked. One should even try to accelerate it. All right, so that's one of the ancestors to the godfather of accelerationism is Nietzsche, right? And we've talked about nihilism. Father Seraphim Rose wrote a whole book about it that I recommend to people. It's a dark view of humanity. It's this idea that it's an anti-Christian perspective, because in the Christian perspective, we look at the creation of mankind and we appreciate it for its beauty, although there are ugly elements to it, right? Sin. We blame that on the devil. But we look at the world that we live in and the natural beauty that God created and the emotions that we can feel as humans, and we say, you know what? Like, even with all of our flaws, we're God's creation, and we love each other, and we show love to one another, and we have empathy. Well, enter the nerds. The nerds have no empathy. Elon Musk literally said this on Joe Rogan. He said empathy was a problem. These nerds, they don't feel empathy, so they don't understand. And they're just like, why don't we just become robot food already? It's a very dark, nihilistic worldview, and I ultimately reject it. Now, Nick also wrote a book called The Dark Enlightenment, in which he advocates for a form of capitalist monarchism controlled by a CEO, which if you listen to part one, that rings all the bells. You're like, dude, that's what that Curtis Yarman guy was saying. Yes. Yes. It's the same thing. It's weird because they hate capitalism, but yet and still they're like, you know what would be great? If we hyper-accelerate capitalism and turn this country into just one big corporation. That's literally what they advocate for. And I'm like, what are you nerds talking about, man? But people, they fall for this. They're like, oh, these guys are so smart. Peter Thiel is like, oh, you know what? You guys got it all figured out. Here's $100 million. I'm like, bro, I don't know. Like, I'm losing faith in humanity for falling for this sometimes. Oh, and housekeeping. Man, I should have wrote their name down. Someone on Patreon, in the comments section, which I read, they said that, because the last episode, I had a very nihilistic, dark perspective on the truth or community. I was like, dude, no one's talking about this stuff. What the hell are we doing here? Like, you guys rely on us to be the conspiracy truthers, to be the ones that look for hidden plots and talk about things that are screwed up, and no one's talking about this. And I was corrected. And someone in the comments said, David Icke's been doing it, and that's true. And I thought I mentioned that. I mentioned it somewhere in the past, because I did say that sometimes I'm on Twitter, sometimes I'm not, okay? And I had a hard time, but while I was on there, David Icke has always been vocal about the technocrats destroying us. And they also cited Greg Reese, which I agree. Also, Greg Reese, yes, that's true. Big timer in the conspiracy movement. And who's the other one? I know Billy Ray Valentine's always about that action, but there was someone else. And the truth is, the more I look around, like I've reasserted myself into the truther spaces. I was really disappointed and let down, honestly. And I had unplugged from a lot of the social medias, and now I'm kind of like, okay, let me get back in there. And I'm optimistic and I feel good, right? I had a great conversation with the Nephilim Death Squad guys, and they really like kind of made me feel better about things. I'm like, dude, you know what? Like, I can be proud to be back in this truther community again. Like, I was really disappointed for a long time. I was really upset. And I do see a tide shifting. It's very clear to me. I'm seeing a lot of people citing and calling out a lot of problems going on. Shout out Shane Cashman was posting some stuff. And I'm like, good. This is great. This is what I need. You know, because Shane is very, I don't know his relationship with Tim Pool, but I was critical of Tim Pool in the past. And I always say this. I'm like, look, I don't know the guy. I don't follow him. I just know that he was taking $500,000 from Russians a month to make YouTube videos. And I'm like, that's messed up. That seemed, because I'm like ultra patriot, man. I'm like, if Russians came to me and was like, we'll give you $500,000 a month, I'd be like, hell no. And then I go home and I think about it and I'd be like, damn, that would change my life. But then ultimately I would be like, hell no, dude, I'm a patriot. I fought for this country. I took an oath to the Constitution and I take that serious and I stand by it. Like, the money ain't worth it to me, okay? But then I'm like, why am I being a jerk to these people? You know what I mean? Like, we all have different values and ethics. I don't know, man. Like, we all have different perspectives and worldviews and experiences growing up, and I'm like, maybe I'm being hard on these people, and I'm like, maybe I'm the jerk, you know? So I go back and forth, but regardless, my point is, to see Shane, like, posting some stuff critical of the technocrats and a bunch of these other truthers, I'm like, you know what? I'm feeling good about this. I feel like the tide is shifting. I feel like people are finally waking up to this stuff. And that's what Mind Hack on Patreon commented. Said, you, David Icke, and Greg Reese, and Ryan from American Vagabond are the few speaking on this. Ryan Christian from American Vagabond, which ironically I had beefs with in the past. He's close with Whitney Webb, I believe. I don't follow him. I follow him on like Twitter. Like, I know who he is because he's big in the Twitter community. I had beef with him because he talked about me on one of his shows. He's like, who the hell is this guy? Who does he think he is? Isaac Weishaupt? I was like, boy, you better put some respect on my name. No, but it's fine. Like, I let things slide pretty easy. I'm like, and then later he followed me on Twitter. I was like, I love this, man. Let's bond. Let's break bread. Maybe he didn't recognize real at that time. Also, Alan posted on the Patreon that apparently the name Tion that I talked about with Luis Borges' short story on the part one, it's pronounced T-L-O-N, like Tilon, like Elon Musk, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, great comment. Dude, lively comment section in the Patreon. If you're on the Patreon, drop a comment. That comment section's red hot. They're usually not this hot. You guys are interested in this, and I'm so happy because I got three more episodes to throw at you. Well, today and then two more. All right, back to the show. Nick. All right, what were we talking about? Nick Land, he had a book, Dark Enlightenment. I read it. Sucks. And he's like, yeah, we need to turn America into a big old Kmart. You know how good that worked out? A big old Sears. That'll work out great. Let's have a CEO run the place because the CEOs are always looking out for everyone else. Are these people just like, are their heads so far up their own ass they have no idea? Do they not look at anything? And he's like, oh, democracy's bad. Equal rights bad. I'm like, how are people endorsing this? How are people like J.D. Vance like, yeah, this is, yep, it's what we do. What are you talking about, bro? You were in the Marines, dude. What happened? What kind of brainwash? What kind of sellout are you, dude? With your eyeliner, bro. So basically, they're anti-constitution. And they say that, the worldview from that essay is like, look, the problem with the Constitution and democracy and equality, it's not like they're just hating. They are, but like, that's not the thing. Their problem is they're like, those things slow down the accelerationism. Those things slow down the technological singularity and putting us in the digital matrix. And, we need to get rid of that. We need to be like a Silicon Valley outfit, move fast and break things. which is why you see what's happening right now. And he blames the leftists for slowing this down, calling them the brakes of progress. He calls it the great work of the left, a bit of a Freemasonic term there. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And what's crazy, if you read his essay, two-thirds of the essay is about race relations and stuff and like subtle racist jabs. I was like, dude, who are these psychopaths? Then The Guardian, they wrote an article about accelerationism in May of 2017. This has been on the radar for a long time. I slept on this completely. And they talk about a 1967 novel called Lord of Light. And it had a plot of that featured a group of revolutionaries that they called accelerationists who wanted to take society to a higher level by suddenly transforming society's attitude to technology and embracing it. And it says stuff like, you know, like most science fiction, the sci-fi becomes reality. And that's what accelerationism comes from, is like this novel from the 60s, apparently. They want automation. They want to merge the digital with the human. That's the transhuman, right? That's the different. That's what that means, is no longer purely biological, but partially cybernetic cyborg, you know. Basically, Arnold and determinate a deregulation of business. So there's a little bit of right-wing stuff and a drastically scaled back government. Again, more right-wing stuff. No judgment, just saying. That's the sort of worldview. But there is a leftist side of this. And we're going to talk about that when we get into the documentary of Jake and Dinos Chapman. Okay, so you're out there and you're like, Isaac, quit picking on the righties. I'm going to pick on the lefties too, all right? Keep it fair and balanced. Sorry, I'm like yelling into the mic. I'm like, I must have taken too much tea. I'm up on that tea, bro. So anyways, then the article talks about Nick Land. And I didn't even tell you who he was. He's a British philosopher. He taught at Warwick University in the 1990s and eventually leaves academia because he was all coked out, basically. That I found elsewhere, but he was very influential in the art world and music and stuff, more so than philosophy in the 90s. And it had referenced a bunch of places that were influenced by Nick Land, including Jake and Dinos Chapman, which we'll talk about. They were members of that CCRU group, which we'll talk about. I'd even toss in Nine Inch Nails. I can't confirm that. I should have just Googled that before I started recording. I just thought of that. When I'm listening to Nine Inch Nails, I hear all of this nihilistic accelerationism and tech, sort of like technological singularity kind of stuff. Even Genesis P. Ulrich from Throbbing Gristle, like these are kind of like quasi adjacent, you know, industrial music. You could probably throw David Bowie in there too, right? I mean, these are all legendary people, to be fair. So anyway, then it talks about Trump's first term being cited as the first mainstream manifestation of accelerationism in politics. And then it connects to Steve Bannon and Peter Thiel, which, you know, old hat for listeners here. They know all this stuff because you listened to part one. And when you dig into Nick Land's philosophy of accelerationism, you find it connected. I talked about all that racist stuff and white ethno-state talk. It is connected to these satanic Nazi murder groups like Order of the Nine Angles. And we're going to cover that in part three. It's a big topic. It's going to be the darkest episode of the four. Oof. But let's keep going with Nick. We're going to keep rolling with Nick Land because I'm trying to connect this whole accelerationism into the occult, which I will successfully do here shortly. So we have to talk about this 90s group called the Cybernetic Culture Research Unit, the CCRU. Because Nick Land was one of the creators and founders. It was actually founded by a woman named Sadie Plant in 1993 as a cyber feminist research group. But apparently she was kind of blasé about it. And Nick was like, bet, I'll take it over. And he started really hammering down on a bunch of writings and experiments and things. So he took it over in 1995. It's a collective of philosopher art nerds. at Warwick University in England. Okay. It says that the writings and experimentation involved cyberpunk ideas, gothic horror, I imagine H.P. Lovecraft, as we'll talk about here soon, and it was influential into the accelerationism movement. And if you go to Wikipedia, this is what Wikipedia says about it. It says the CCRU's work is characterized by loose, abstract, theoretical writing combining elements of cyberpunk and gothic horror with critical theory, esotericism, numerology, and demonology, which often interplay in their deployment of occult systems and surreal narratives. So right off the bat, Illuminate confirm. I'm like, bro, they're talking about the occult on the Wikipedia page? So Illuminate confirm right off the bat. And they employed a concept at the CCRU called hyperstition, which is described as self-fulfilling prophecies that come true through their existence and spread. And Nick describes it, because I listened to a couple of interviews with him, he describes it as a positive feedback circuit with culture as a component feeding it back into its own system to amplify it, which is kind of in electronics engineering. We talked about the positive feedback loops being sort of amplifier circuits. And it's a play on the word superstition, right? That's an easy way. Superstition and hyperstition. He compares hyperstition to, whereas superstition is false, though, hyperstition becomes real. It's false till it becomes real. He compares it to capitalism and says that it's very, he says capitalism is sensitive to hyperstition because it takes confidence to create realities for people to buy products and to make wages, which is making something out of nothing, which is very magical in a way. Remember Tracy Twyman had a whole book about the alchemy of money, and that's kind of what it is. It really is. It's kind of interesting. So the CCRU is studying all these things, and it's a mix of an hyperstition, and it's a mix of propaganda, magic, predictive programming, symbolism, synchronicities, manifesting new realities, and it is related to Keck and meme magic, which we've talked about in the past several times. Because the whole idea, the short version is that Pepe the Frog in the 2016 election helped spread chaos magic and meme magic online through the 4chan, which helped get Donald Trump in the office the first time. There's documentaries about this. I've seen all of them. HBO's got a good one. It's like a 5-part series. There was one I saw, I think I paid for it on Vimeo about Keck and Pepe. It's insane. It's wild. And it all makes sense when you understand that this was always the plan. So why was Nick Land in all this cyber stuff? Well, he was actually studying philosophies from a guy named Gil Deleuze. I'm 100% saying that name wrong. And Gil Deleuze, he was into virtuality and the ideas of space and time. And that influenced Nick Land, who was like, oh, snap, here comes the internet. And ARPANET, the creation of ARPANET back in the 60s, 70s, was very much talking about getting man into the cyberspace. And then you lump in this 90s time frame. You had all these sort of fantasies of cyberspace that you see in movies like Lawnmower Man, Disclosure, and so on. And there's a term called neuromantic, and it's a mindset that is very cybernetic. A lot of computer geeks have this thought, and they prefer virtuality over reality and community, right? So it's very much what you think. It's like gamer nerds in the basement that we make fun of, you know, incels. Like, they prefer to just live online, and that is what fueled up Pepe the Frog on the 4chans. And we talked about Lawnmower Man in a film analysis I did in June of 2020. Link in the show notes. And I detailed how it's related to the, back in 2020, I related to how it's part of the transhuman matrix plan, chaos magic. We even talked about pagan gods, and it all makes sense now. And I'm like, oh, snap. Like, that was for real. That wasn't just symbolism I was picking up on. So check that out from June of 2020. If you've never seen Lawnmower Man, it's a classic. If you like 90s cyberpunk stuff, you got to see it. There was an interview with Nick Land in 2009 from Orphan Drift Archive is where I read it. And they ask him, they say, I wonder if you could elaborate on what exactly is concealed. What will be revealed by the apocalypse? He says, what is concealed, the occult, is an alien order of time, which betrays itself through coincidences, synchronicities, and similar indications of an intelligent arrangement of fate. An example is the Kabbalistic pattern occulted in ordinary languages, a pattern that cannot emerge without eroding itself, since the generalized human understanding and deliberated usage of letter clusters as numerical units would shut down the channel of coincidence, alien information. It is only because people use words without numerizing them that they remain open as conduits for something else. To dissolve the screen that hides such things and by hiding them enables them to continue is to fuse with the source of the signal and liquidate the world. Now, I'm confused too. And that's how this Nick Land guy talks. He's hard to understand, and maybe I'm just too stupid. But if you've ever, I took a philosophy course in college, and philosophy is very difficult to read. These people kind of, it's like a different language, kind of. You have to really get into it, because I remember the first couple of lessons in the philosophy course I took, I was like, dude, I don't even know what they're saying. But by the end of it, I was picking up on it. I was like, okay, I kind of get the language they're using here. Then another question, they say, in the catacomic, you also relate hyperstition to the old ones, the nomos. Are these water spirits the avatars of communication? I'm fascinated by your reference to the Dogon voodoo, shamanism, magic. How do these archaic occult systems, which are so heavily coded and hidden, relate to the immense speeds and ultra-modernity implied by the term hyperstition? I've always been fascinated by archaic systems myself. They are the dark roots of modern technology. And Nick responds, John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness includes the line, I thought I was making it up, but all the time they were telling me what to write. They are the old ones, explicitly, and this line operates on an extraordinary pitch of hyperstitional intensity. From the side of the human subject, beliefs hyperstitionally condense into realities. But from the side of the hyperstitional object, the old ones, human intelligences are mere incubators through which intrusions are directed against the order of historical time. The archaic hint or suggestion is a germ or catalyst, retro-deposited out of the future along a path that historical consciousness perceives as technological progress. He's saying that these spirits from another dimension are guiding our reality. They're taking us down a path into the technological singularity. And some of these sensitives, these artists, can channel this knowledge, this information, and then manifest it into the world. And we also covered Mouth of Madness, by the way, in June of 2021. And it's only on the supporter feeds. On Patreon, I've got a link in the show notes. We talked about it because I had written my second alien book, Alien, UFOs, and the Occult, User Illusion 2, where I went through several movies, including John Carpenter's Apocalypse Trilogy, because this is all very related. Because Mouth of Madness is very much about manifesting realities from the spoken word fictional novel. And if you get deeper into the CCRU, you find that it was using this esoteric numerology and demonology with a thing called a pneumogram. Anyway, and we'll come back to that in a second. I got a clip for you guys to listen to. But the CCRU inspirations, you know, because it was the mid-90s, include techno music, sci-fi, raves, rave culture, occult studies, H.P. Lovecraft, William Gibson, the guy who wrote Neuromancer, it was kind of the first cyberpunk book, Nietzsche, William S. Burroughs, Carl Jung. Which is interesting because in my alien books, I talked about how NASA was fueled by nerds who read a lot of pulp comics, right? They were like, we need to go to the moon. That's what they show us in the comic books. And then they manifested into a reality. Not really, wink, wink. We didn't go to the moon, but they tell you they did. Now, the group, the CCRU, got more and more experimental and eventually fizzled out. Or as Robin McKay put it, descended into sheer madness. Because Nick got addicted to amphetamines, and then he left, And then they got CCRU got kicked off the Warwick campus, but then started operating out of the Leamington Spa. Yes, that Leamington Spa, the one that Aleister Crowley's from, and Leon Vitali, Red Cloak from Eyes Wide Shut. And I think that's also where the Rothschilds owned the most land and had the masks in the public square that you see in Eyes Wide Shut. I'll put my Eyes Wide Shut index. I've got a ton of episodes on that. You can check that out for more. Then Nick was, there's an interview on Scott Mannion's Metalore from September 2023, and he revealed a lot more. In the intro, he starts off by talking about predicting the future and Kabbalah and how Nick is facilitating communication with what he calls the outside and how humans are going back to that. And the outside is a term that Nick uses to refer to a concept of a inhuman, chaotic, and potentially destructive force inherent in all of technology and capitalism, which will ultimately lead to a meltdown of human values and reason. And he believes it's a force driving us down a path. And I believe it's this, the old ones. He thinks we're these demonic spirits from another dimension are fueling us down this path, and there's no stopping it. And it says it, you'll never guess where he got this idea. It says, Nick Land draws from various disciplines, including cybernetics, science fiction, and occultism, to explore the outside, seeing it as a manifesting in the form of technological advancements, artificial intelligence, and the potential for a collapse of human values. And the short version is that he believes the outside is a force affecting our world. And ironically, in the interview, he refers to miracles from God or the flood being similar to the force. But stops short of God and the devil. I don't understand. But anyway, he talks about the CCRU was actually successful in generating a bunch of effects and synchronicities like Carl Jung. And they were doing more than just writing about magic. They were doing it. And this is very similar to what Genesis P. Oridge and the Temple of Psychic Youth was doing, as well as Grant Morrison, the comic book writer. This gets into chaos, magic, and all kinds of stuff. Organized groups doing rituals across the world. And then they have a discussion about how the CCRU was engaging with this outside force, which I read as a Luciferian demonic force in my worldview. And here's the part I wanted you to listen to. There's a clip. It's about 3 minutes long. And this is Nick Land talking. And I don't even need to tell you, illuminate, confirm, because you're going to be thinking it the whole time. Take a listen to what he says, and I'll unpack it with you.
There is a sense of the retrospective about it. That's to say, what one finds out one was doing is very belated. So, for instance, just in terms of sort of Kabbalistic numerology, it was during the kind of central CCRU period that from somewhere, I mean, I've been asked how this came, and honestly, I can't give any detail, but somewhere we formulated the what we call the alphanumeric Kabbalah. It's a very simple English gematria or numerization, and used it a little bit. I mean, it was confirmed for us in its value by the fact that the current 93 mantra, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law," came to 777, which is the name, obviously, of Crowley's major Kabbalistic work. So it seems to us that was extremely strong confirmation. But only very recently have I learned that the cybernetic culture research unit by alphanumeric Kabbalah comes to 666.
We had the number. You're kidding. Wow. That's funny.
At Beaconsfield, because it's the triangle of 36, and 36 has a very important place on this diagram that was very, very important to our work that we called the Numogram.
Yeah.
And so because there's a gate 36 and the triangle of 36 is 666, we had 666 marked quite prominently in chalk on the wall of this Beaconsfield art space. But the fact that the Cybernetic Culture Research Unit itself is being, you know, endorsed by the number 666, it was something very, very recent as a discovery. And so it's really crucial in the way that I look about this whole history that we really didn't know what we were doing. You know, like a lot, it's like things were being done, things were being said, words were being constructed, and things were being written. And what they mean is not something that can be derived from any kind of lucid motives or intentions that can be dated back to the point where those things emerge. And so really then the task that is kind of suggested by that is, you know, whatever was actually going on, such that things were being retrieved in a way that was just not understood, but clearly was happening, is something that one wants to methodically pursue and sort of, it's not at all that being conscious of what one is doing is the crucial thing. We are proving that is, but at the same time, seeing retrospectively what was happening does give some suggestions concerning method that can be currently applied.
If they said they were doing Kabbalah, numerology, and they formulated an alphanumeric Kabbalah and used the Crowley current 93, it's like a magical force, and how the numerology of CCRU turned out to be the number 666. I mean, illuminate, confirm all day, right? And he talked about how, again, they didn't know what they were doing, but they were successfully channeling information from somewhere, from the outside, the outer, which, you know, that's what the term of the Antichrist and Satan comes from. When they call him the outer force or the adversary, it comes from North and South Egypt, where apparently the Northern Egypts, they didn't like the Southern Egypts, and Set was the force of the Southern Egypt, so they called him the adversary in the outer sort of Egypt. If you read Lords of the Left-Hand Path, he talks about this. Then they talk about the first stage of initiation into this thought process is to understand that we live in an illusion. This is the simulation theory. And he says there's movies you have to understand, which is Terminator and The Matrix, which those are Gnostic movies, because Gnosticism is, they believe in this simulation theory stuff. We talked about, ironically, last week, I think, on Breaking Social Norms podcast with my wife, I explained to her what Gnosticism is from a very simplistic worldview, and we talked about simulation theory because that's what it is. So when you hear these nerds talking about we live in a simulation, they are subscribing to this Gnostic worldview. And he talks about, he had an interesting analogy as the, he says the Book of Revelation shows us the end of the world as a scroll that rolls up, and about how reality is just kind of written down and it can disappear, and it's like a computer simulation. But anyways, the point is the Gnosticism is the gateway drug to the occult and worshiping demons and so on, right? And I talked to, I don't know, like a 4 or 5 part series on The Matrix. Again, link in the show notes, December 2021. If you're on the supporter feed, scroll back to there to get the ad-free version. Then they talk about the I Ching working and about how Nick had this article about Keck and Trump. And I couldn't find that article, by the way. The link was broken. And again, channeling information. And he says again, we are not in control of the data being transmitted, but we can tune in. Let's see what else he talks about. He mentions orthodoxy, which I found interesting. Apparently again, he's hard to understand, but I think he's saying that there's similar worldviews of breaking from the simulation in orthodoxy, which I don't know what he's talking about. I'd be interested to learn more about that. Then they talk about accelerationism as part of entropy and the idea that in a closed system, entropy always increases. And entropy just means it's the second law of thermodynamics. It says that in a closed system that chaos and disorder will only increase constantly over time. So they're like, look, that's the end game, and that's what this is headed to. Let's just do the damn thing already. They talk about how there's no laws in the world that can stop this malevolent H.P. Lovecraft super AI. And then they talk about Rocco's Basilisk experiment. And I'm going to explain this to you because I find it very interesting. It's a thought experiment that says, hey, if in the future there's a super intelligent AI, what would happen if it wanted to punish anyone who knew of its potential existence but didn't contribute anything to manifesting it or tried to hold it back from manifesting? And it's an idea that the AI, when it becomes sentient, would blackmail anyone who tried to hold it back. And thus, someone trying to hold back us from achieving our singularity. And the creator, Rocco later said he wished he had never learned about any of these ideas because drove him mad, I guess. And what's interesting is that Elon Musk hooked up and met Grimes over this subject because apparently Elon was mentioned on the original forum post about this, and Grimes would reference this Rocco's Basilisk theory in her video Flesh Without Blood from 2015, because one of her characters was named Rococo Basilisk. And in 2018, Elon referenced the character in a tweet. Grimes liked that he was the first person to get the joke, and then they started talking, they hooked up. He has baby number, 3 through 10 with Grimes, I guess. And what's interesting is that Grimes, she was talking about on an interview about how 10% of people are evil, and the interviewer asked her if she's evil. And she said, well, that's extremely unlikely. And she said, but even if I am evil, it's because we're living in a simulation and she's just an AI sent to screw things up and she would be completely unconscious of it. And I'm like, these people, man, no free agency, just abdicating all responsibility. She's like, look, I'm in a simulation, and if I'm evil doing wrong things, it's because the AI is doing this, you know? What? Complete nonsense. Like, grow up, dude. And I'm sure this is how Elon Musk thinks. Like, they're both complete narcissists. Anyway, let's wrap up with Nick, and then we'll move on to Jake and Dinos Chapman. Nick, he kind of goes in the interview to talk more about this outside force, and that's kind of his jam. He even mentions Alexander Dugin, which I found interesting when you get into traditionalism and things. And talks about symbolism, numerology, and so on. So you can see that Nick is influenced by exterior forces that I believe would be evil, based on the nihilistic tendencies of everything he's saying. And the anti-human thing. Because what does the devil want to do? He wants to kill all the humans, God's creation. He wants us to believe in simulation theory and that we're trapped in this slave planet and all these awful things. And I choose not to believe it because that's a dark worldview. Why live your life like that? All right. Let's talk about Jake and Dinos Chapman. Because before we talk about the satanic pedo Nazis in part 3, we need to know why gears got shifted so abruptly. And we talked about Jake and Dinos Chapman being part of Nick Land's CCRU. And I thought, why are those names so familiar? And as you know, I covered the Balenciaga thing on multiple appearances and episodes in 2022. I was on SiriusXM for several episodes before Rude Jude fired me. I was going to be on a recurring segment, and Rude Jude was in fact rude and fired me. And then he got fired, which was insane. I was like, bro, because when we were doing it, he's like, man, we're going to do this series. You're going to be like the conspiracy guy. I was like, bet, let's go. Because I'd been in the studio a couple times, whatever. And he was like, let's just have you talk about this stuff like Balenciaga. I was like, are you sure, dude? Aren't you worried about this? And he was like, no, man, I've been here a long time. Like, it's fine. And then sure enough, within months, because I don't remember what happened. There was something that happened. I'd done like maybe 3 or 4 shows, and then at the end of the one, he got mad at me for something. I don't remember what it was. Anyway, and he was just like, I forget. How did this happen now? Anyway, I'm sure I talked about it back when it happened. It was real sad because I really like Rude Jude. And then within months of him kicking me off the show, he got fired. I was like, damn, bro. You shouldn't have been talking about the Illuminati. What are you doing? You should have listened to me. You should have listened to your boy. I've been canceled enough. Man, I messaged him. I said, hey, man, when he got fired, I said, hey, man, if you want to like plug, because he's got a podcast, I think, now. And I was like, bro, let's get on my show. Let's talk about it. Let's plug your show. But I don't know. He don't give a fuck. Anyway, okay, so Balenciaga, we talked about all those images of the kids holding BDSM teddy bears and the court documents to, like, child videos. Remember, it was a whole thing, right? And the parent company, and this is where Jake and Dino's come in, because the parent company of Balenciaga is Kering, and they own, like, all the big brands, Gucci, Saint Laurent, how do you say that? And the CEO of Kering is this billionaire, François-Henri Pinault. That's Salma Hayek's husband. Ugh. And he also owns Christie's Auction House. And that auction house, which auctions tons of art, okay? So, like, I don't know how Illuminati confirm any of those characters are. But they had an art series they were selling by the Chapman Brothers. Which I would say, like, to me, like, that doesn't raise any alarms. I'm just like, okay. Like, some of the conspiracy people were connecting all these dots and being like, well, you see, Balenciaga and all these art people are into all this stuff. But the fact remains that this art is disgusting. And it was by the Chapman Brothers, and it was of these child mannequins. The most controversial was one called F-U-C-K Face. And I think I just swore anyway. I can't keep track of my swearing. Sorry, folks. Anyway, the F face, it was 140K, and I'll describe it through Evie Magazine. It's a male toddler with an erect penis in place of his nose and an anus in the place of his mouth. The piece of art shows the boy walking with a large brown t-shirt and purple sneakers. Another piece of art with the same title, F-Face, shows an adolescent girl standing completely nude with the same genitalia in place of her nose and mouth. It's disgusting, right? Yet another disturbing image shows a young child with two heads, and their faces are joined by what appears to be a vagina, and it's titled Two-Faced C-U-N-T, and it's sold for more than $111,000. There are many other parts of art from the Chapman Brothers that show severed body parts, blood, and gore. So, I mean, I'm not one to judge people with art. I think these are disgusting. I don't know why you would buy or create these things. But then when you understand the philosophy of these nihilists, you're like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. You look at the body with disdain, like the devil. So, and this gets into all kinds of stuff. So Jake and Dinos Chapman, they released a film in 2023 called Accelerate or Die, You Get the Dystopia You Deserve. And you can watch the on free on YouTube. And it says, capitalism is going to end the world and we all know it. And it talks about how humans are these cyborgs of sorts and we build things without realizing the repercussions. Like, it talks about how AI is going to be the last machine we ever build. I was like, damn, that's kind of, it's a good document. Well, it's a interesting documentary. It's about an hour. It's on YouTube. If you go to Jack Chap Woman YouTube channel, you'll find Jake Chapman's. I don't know if he's trans or something. I don't know why it says Jake Chap Woman, but ironically, the video was posted on March 1st, 2025. I was like, what are the odds? This is weird. And I'll walk you through some of the ideas and then we'll wrap this thing up. Okay. We're almost done. Hang in there. We're almost done. In case you don't want to watch the hour, I'll do it in like 10 minutes. Starts out explaining this radical idea of accelerationism, how it really is unsettling. We're not in control. Something else is. That's Nick Land, the outside, right? It's puppeteering us. And it says that it's a response to modernity and capitalism. This goes back to the dawn of time. And there's this end of the world process that's coming. We can't escape it. We can't escape capitalism. And we need a new model. And the technological capitalist utopia is that we're living in right now is the pinnacle of human existence. We have instant access to any like product, fact, anything, work of art. We've got cars that drive themselves, algorithms that predict our desires before they even happen. It's instant gratification. You go back 100 years, it looks like magic, right? And then it goes into the idea that capitalism is, you know, about all these investments and returns. And they compare it to feudalism, where you've got these workers and the exploitation of capitalism, which is true. Like, there's no profit motive without exploitation. And it talks about capitalism exploits not just human beings, but the land, right? And the Industrial Revolution has enabled this process of the mass destruction of Mother Earth. And the rapid acceleration of technological development is destroying the whole planet. And the way we live is completely unsustainable. We know this, and we're not doing anything about it, and we can't avoid it. So, in a way, the outside forces that Nick Land talks about would probably be interested in stopping us, right? How's it going to do that? Well, through the singularity. And he talks a bit about how we think we can control nature, which made me think of Michael Hoffman's book, which I detailed heavily in the Twin Peaks Grey Lodge series. This idea that we can cannibalize nature and think that nothing bad's going to happen and sort of dominate, you know, the woods, the nature. And let's see. Well, you already know capitalism. He kind of goes on and on about it, right? And it says capitalism limits the future of whatever it wants us to be, right? Capitalism wants us to be the slaves and the tools for increasing value. And turned out that technology should have made our lives easier and better and given us more free time to be with loved ones and create and things. But that's not what happened. What happened is, and you know, it should have given us more freedom, but it didn't do that. It made more people richer off of the exploitation of others. And he made an interesting point. He says, we find it easier to fantasize about the end of the world than the end of capitalism, which I thought was interesting. And they talk about the CCRU. You know, we already talked about that. You don't need to hear more about that. They talk about humanity always pursuing technology back to, you know, fire and the wheel. And, you know, and then more critiques about it, making just a few people rich instead of making all of our lives easier. And this is the positive feedback loop, right? That we started and there's no stopping now. They talk about the ARPANET being the foundation of the internet, allowing machines to work together, and we're creating this global network. Humans are part of the global network with our phones being extensions of ourselves. Like, we are cyborgs now. We just haven't put the phone into our body quite yet. And they give an example. They said, again, interesting, if aliens came to our world and tried to describe who we were, they would tell their other alien friends, like, these people are attached to these devices called phones. That would definitely be a part of who we are. It is interesting, right? They talk about that philosopher Deleuze or whatever again. So again, it's very influenced by accelerationism and Nick Land and all this, right? And they say, well, what do we do about all this, right? We've crossed this threshold. We obviously can't stop capitalism, and the technology isn't doing what we wanted it to do. What do we do now? Well, we accelerate it. And there's different views on how to accelerate. You've got left accelerationism. And they want to find things that push us towards collapsing the capitalist system. And they want to repurpose the technology to accommodate a new world that increases freedom for us, to free up our time as human beings, to realize that we don't have to work all the time. This philosophy is seen with like the universal basic income ideas of Andrew Yang. Bernie Sanders was advocating we only work 4 days a week. Like, that's that view, right? Which, I mean, if you ask me, I'm like, I like that one better. But, you know, I'm just a dirty old lib, apparently. But I'm like, I don't know. That sounds pretty nice. Why don't we do that? But then you've got the other side, which is the far right accelerationists. And they say that, well, on the other side of the emancipation argument, you've got the far right idea. And they compare it to the 2019 Christchurch shooting, who had a manifesto about accelerationism, apparently, where they view the technology as a way of reestablishing control over us. A surveillance state is how I would read that. Okay. Then you've got xenofeminism. That's an offshoot of accelerationism. And they say, well, nature's unjust. Let's just change nature and choose our biologies. And you want to be a transgender cat? Like, go for it. Let's splice in some cat DNA and make that happen. And they defend this by saying, hey, we already use technology to help women give birth. This, and the xenofeminism is a counterpart to the left accelerationism. And it's about rejecting the natural order of things. They want you to choose your own sex, gender, race. And they defend it by saying, you know, identity is already kind of artificial anyway. So let's just accelerate this biotech and, you know, liberate ourselves from what we've been told we need to do. And this is part of a sort of a trans left accelerationism agenda. And from my personal opinion, I don't know, whatever. I don't get into that. I don't really care. I don't suffer with those like identity issues where I'm like, man, I feel like I'm a woman trapped in a man's body. So I can't identify with that. I think if people want to do that, like that's up to them. I don't get excited for it. I'm like, I don't know. Why do people feel this way? But I don't give a damn. Whatever you want to do, go for it. Does that fit in line with God's desires? I don't know. I've heard arguments against, pro and against that. So again, I'm more of a live and let live. Like if that's what people want to do, man, whatever, dude. You got to come to terms with your, you know, however you want to live. Then you've got unconditional accelerationism. This is unleashed capitalism in its raw form. It says, look, politics failed. Politicians are awful. Let's just get rid of it completely. And this is more along the lines of what we're going through right now. And the overall view of the documentary is that human biology is the same process of technology. We are just simply computers. And this is interesting to me because this goes back to the studies of John C. Lilly. He had a writing about the mind as a biocomputer. He was the one banging the dolphins and all that stuff. And they view this, they're like, yeah, the human beings are just computers, and this is just a process of the planet. Again, atheist sort of worldview. And capitalism is just an AI trying to, you know, reformat the whole planet, and humans are just part of the evolution to create and manifest an AI. And they cite Karl Marx saying that how we've become appendages of the machine of capitalism. And they make this interesting analogy of how we created machines for industrial revolution, and now we're bootstrapping AI, and we are now the machines for the AI, which is fascinating, right? And we're creating the singularity that AI will outstrip human intelligence, and it gets to the point where it will no longer need us. It will need our input. This is the artificial general intelligence or super intelligence, and it'll be the last thing we create. And it could also, and there's potentials here, right? Like it could not be interested in us at all, or it could be mad at us for creating it as a slave to the human race, or it could, if it's disinterested, it could just view us like an ant, like an insect, and it would accidentally kill us. Like it's indifferent. Or maybe we're projecting our own human malevolence and violence into the super AI. And then it talks about, this is sort of the in conclusion of the show. It says, how much of this idea about AI and what we're thinking about it comes from our imagination? How much of it comes from science fiction? And it says, like, AI is a product of science fiction anyway. Blade Runner, Ghost in the Shell, all these ideas of, like, can we transfer our human consciousness? Can we merge into this digital intelligence? Are we disrupting a perfect, harmonious, natural world and we need to go? Like the outside forces are pulling us into the wood chipper? And they kind of argue about this back and forth, and they say, no, this isn't a perfect world because the sun will eventually burn out. The moon will eventually, the moon's moving away from us at, you know, a couple inches a year. And without the moon, you don't have the tides, and it'll, you know, destroy everything living on this planet at a certain point. So, like, to say that we're living in a harmonious, perfect natural world, that's not really true either. And this is where you get into this ultimate goal of these people. They believe in a simulation world, Gnostic philosophy. They're like, we need to escape from this imperfect, awful existence. And where do they want us to go? Into the digital matrix that they will provide, which will be run by the AI superintelligence. Which is interesting, right? And they say that accelerationism makes it harder to make sense of this world around us. Like, in this time of chaos, we're kind of constantly in this anxiety of, like, what's going on right now? This is weird. And it ends with the human being, the Homo sapien, no longer existing, no longer being viable. And accelerationists, they just accept this. They say, we're on a path. We can't predict it. There's nothing to lose by leaving humans behind, so let's just go for it and see what happens. And to me, it's a very nihilistic, heretical belief that we need to escape this world. And maybe I'm naive, right? Maybe my religious bias, maybe my worldview makes me naive and stupid and foolish, you know? I just don't know. I just know that, like, technology, social media is a good example, right? Is that making our lives better or worse? And I'd be like, man, I kind of think it's making it worse. And maybe that's just because I'm an old jerk who lived in the 90s before cell phones. I just feel like we're bombarded with information. We're constantly connected. It's weird, right? It's weird to be my age because I've lived through both existences. And there's something that gives me ick about social media when I see friends and stuff posting these. And it's weird, right? Like, you want to keep up with your friends and, like, hey, they're like probably like, hey, I got these nice photos. Let me put them on the internet for people to see. But then, like, it provokes feelings of insecurities, and you're like, well, damn, I can't afford to go to Dubai. This is a little struggle I had. I had a friend from high school, and he just kept posting these crazy pictures. He was, like, a DJ and, like, all these bad chicks, and he was in Dubai and all these places. I was like, I started feeling bad about myself instead of feeling good for him, which isn't good, man. I'm like, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be a big old hater. But it starts to provoke insecurities, and you're like, damn, man. What am I doing with my boring ass life? That sucks. Because we're like kind of self-centered creatures, right? Like, we're always worried about ourselves more than being happy for others. Anyway, my point is, I don't know that technology is going to make this a better world than God did. That's the short version. So, anyway, that's part two. So now you know the characters involved in this philosophy that we are living through, which is being implemented right now, goes back to demonic forces channeling from the outside through occult practices. Illuminate confirmed, right? Not good. So in part three, you're going to come back, and next week we're going to talk about part three, and this one's going to be the darkest episode. We're going to talk about these satanic Nazi groups, ritual magic, and how these Nazi pedos are... They're trying to unleash absolute chaos and death and murder and destruction upon this world. So, there you go. I've got lots of links in the show notes for other episodes you can catch up on. In the meantime, on The Matrix and what else did I talk about? Lawnmower Man. And support the podcast. Get your favorite super soft t-shirt with the occult symbolism and pop culture logo. And then on the back it says, these nerds are going to kill us. And that'll strike up conversation. I guarantee it. All right. Okay. Thanks for listening to me. Appreciate you. Till next time, stay positive.